There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So how do we do that? How do we enter into the conversations of the day as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ? Because my goodness, people out there are astir right now. People are just unloading pieces of their mind on one another. And if your social media feed is anything like mine, not everyone is really seeking to communicate the peace of the mind of Christ in the matters of the day. So we as Christians, that's got to be our distinctive witness. There's plenty of conservative talk out there, and there's not enough distinctively Christian talk out there. So that's what I am here to help you do, help you to be informed and equipped to bring the Christian worldview to bear on the matters of the day. I invite you to connect with us online. Our website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can let us know what you're thinking about. I'm on Twitter, at Carmen LaBurge. All right, friends, I'm gonna start with a comment about pace, the pace of things. I'm going to describe our new president as a busy beaver. He is a man who got a job and took to it. And so the readout from the first week, it's really like hard to imagine. This is only like his second Monday in office. Like, he's only been in office technically for a week. The readout from the first week contains so much, it's actually hard to know what on here to focus on and what to worry about. Let me just, I'm just going to plow through these. Obamacare, stepping out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the federal hiring freeze, he reinstated the Mexico City policy, the Dakota Access and Keystone XL pipelines, slicing regulations related to manufacturing and EPA impact reviews, construction of a wall on our southern border, halting funding to sanctuary cities, a travel ban from seven countries, and an indefinite halt on refugees from Syria. Oh, and he talked to Putin and a bunch of other world leaders. Oh, and he hosted a state visit. And there was those women's marches the first Saturday, and there was a March for Life this past Friday. Oh, and Steve Bannon, by the way, is now a National Security Council principal. And 13 of Trump's cabinet nominees, yeah, they would still be awaiting confirmation. Now, which one of those items or the 20 other things that he did and talked about during his first week in office, which one of those items is news? Which is not? What are we missing while we're looking over here, over there? Look at this. I think that one of the greatest challenges for Christians is going to be, how do we remain focused while keeping a finger on the pulse of the culture and everything that everyone is hysterical about? How do we remain focused on the things that concerned us prior to the election, the things that concerned us, that motivated us to get behind a certain candidate? What were the things that, if you voted for Trump, what were the things that drove you to that vote? There were lots of things that you may have disregarded, that you may have subordinated to other issues. And I know that in talking with a lot of people prior to the election, for Christians, there were two main drivers of the Christian vote toward Trump. One of those was going to be that he was going to have the opportunity to name a Supreme Court justice, at least one, to nominate at least one Supreme Court justice for the vacancy created when Antonin Scalia died almost a year ago. So let's stay focused on that. That's something he's going to announce tomorrow night. Are you focused on that, or are you distracted by these many other things? And I'm not saying that these other things are not important. What I'm saying is, from a Christian worldview, there were a few very, very pressing items and concerns that drove the Christian vote in the direction of Donald Trump. And I think that as Christians, we do have to, at some level, remain concerned about, committed to, and focused on the things that that motivated this vote in the first place. So the second thing would be access to abortion. If you recall, the other candidate for president not only Did she view the person in the womb as a person with no constitutional rights up until the very moment that they were born? But she also believed wholeheartedly that American taxpayers should pay for abortions. Okay, so in this first week, well, coming into his second week, the president is going to have the opportunity not only to stand up for life, which he has done by reinstating the Mexico City policy, and has also done by an unprecedented level of support by members of his administration at the March for Life. So in addition to that, we anticipate that when he makes his nominee for the Supreme Court, that that is very likely going to be a pro-life judge. It's certainly going to be a judge who makes determinations based on what the Constitution actually says versus using the court as a place to create law. All right, so that's my encouragement for Christians to remain focused on what's in front of us. Now, certainly the latest thing that the president has done that is causing a stir and causing protests, which, you know, frankly, just may be the new norm, and that is the signing of an executive order related to immigration and refugees. And we're going to return to that subject in just a minute, but we have the privilege of having a conversation right now with Jeannie Mancini. She is the president and national director of the March for Life. You can get all their information at marchforlife.org, but right now you could just go to Twitter, type in hashtag MarchForLife2017 and be overwhelmed, actually, by wonderful, exciting information from the event that just took place this past Friday. So, Jeannie, welcome to the Reconnect.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Hey, we are so excited about what happened on Friday, and we just wanted to celebrate that with you. So just tell us what Friday was like. It was history-making for the March for Life, so tell us about the day.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's a little bit of a whirlwind thinking back upon it. We one of the major victories, perhaps the most important victory, is that we were delighted to have the presence for the first time ever in the history of the March for Life of the Vice President of the United States speaking in person to all of the marchers who were watching on TV and who were there in person. And it was just a really, really beautiful and special moment. We also had from the White House Kellyanne Conway, senior counsel to the president, which was incredible. And of course, the March for Life is you know, not only political. That's one part of what we do, but we're a cultural movement, and we were delighted to have major religious leaders address the crowd. We had Cardinal Dolan, Archbishop of New York, and Bishop Vincent Matthews of the Church of God in Christ, which is the largest African-American denomination in the country, speak about adoption. We also had sports figures Benjamin Watson and entertainment figure Karime Lozano and a whole host of other leaders in the pro-life movement. And just the lineup of the speakers was incredible. One of my favorite was Representative Mia Love from Utah, who shared her personal story, and it was very moving. I mean, even to tears. She herself was in tears, and I think many of those in the crowd were in tears. So that was wonderful, just the lineup and the motivation. I think always the best part is just having all of the young people there in their joy and their enthusiasm. And even though it's a somber moment reflecting on the loss of life that we've had in this country, over 58 million Americans have been lost to abortion, and it's you know, so sad when you contemplate that loss, that enormous loss. But there's also a lot of hope and a lot of energy for the future and for building a culture of life, you know, with all of those young people present who know that abortion is a human rights issue of today. So it was pretty impressive.
And we love the way that you frame the conversation. I think it's helpful to have culture of life language. I think that it's helpful for people to understand that the pro-life movement is comprehensive in scope and nature, that it is certainly advocacy for prenatal life, but it is advocacy for life in all of its stages, in all of its varieties, the beauty of its diversity. And I think that's one of the things that I love about the march. Jeannie, let me just tell you that on Friday, driving to school, my 13-year-old wanted to know why we weren't there. And so
I was
hugely, hugely convicted. And so we're coming as a family next year. And then when I got to work this morning, one of my coworkers said that's actually what her husband gave her for her birthday, was the opportunity for her to go to the March for Life next year. And she said, I don't want to go by myself. And I said, hey, well, we're going. You can come with us. So so I'm just letting you know that there will be at least a half a dozen more people there next year.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's very exciting for young people and mature adults to catch the vision and to be enthusiastic and to recognize their own motivation, desire, and need to participate. And everybody participates out of their own story. And that's what I so appreciate by the people who speak, is that you do get these incredible stories of why people march. And so I wanted to lift that up. Hey, can you give us some comparisons from your perspective? Because there's this incredible juxtaposition between the Women's March the Saturday before and the March for Life on Friday. Can you just juxtapose those two scenes and constituencies and agendas?
Sure. Well, one thing that I think is important to point out is that comparing the two are like comparing apples and oranges, because we are 44 years strong. I mean, we march in blizzards, we march in sub-zero temperatures, and collectively, you know, millions of people over the decades have marched for life. And it's really, when you consider an issue that's gone on for that long, that people come together every single year, I mean, I think it's important to consider that, because it's we've got deep roots in the pro-life movement, and we're not going away. We're growing and we're stronger. And I think that's very important. That's one thing. The next thing is that we're a one-issue group. We're marching for a culture of life, a culture of love for the unborn, for their moms. And it's hard to know what the Women's March, what the real goal of it was. There were a plethora of issues on the platform. I know they did specifically state that they were pro-choice and wouldn't let pro-lifers come out. They did not specifically decide to be an anti-Trump platform, which was interesting, because I think a lot of the people that were there thought that that's why they were there. So I think in terms of the focus of the issues, that's a big comparison, a big thing to compare. The other thing is that March for Life participants are, you know, really motivated by love and by life, and by respect for the inherent dignity of the human person. We're a nonviolent, peaceful protest. We're not angry. We're working ardently and passionately to build a culture of life, and we grieve the loss of life, but, you know, we're about love and respect. You're never going to hear a March for Life participant talk about blowing up anyone's house, much less the White House. You know, and we heard a lot of that last weekend. Also, it's very youthful. We're a very young and loving and positive and enthusiastic crowd. I think the mean age was much older with the Women's March. So, you know, those are a few comparisons. But I think, you know, there have been some really powerful comparisons out on the internet. I saw a pictorial story, you know, showing like different images, like the signs at the March for Life versus the signs at the Women's March, you know, and the message at the March for Life versus the message. And it was very, very powerful. So that might be fun to go check out. I know I retweeted it on my Twitter account. So, but I hope does that answer the question, Carmen, for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really helpful. And let me just tell folks that you are at Jeannie MFL. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. That's my Twitter account, at Jeannie MFL, JeanneMFL.
And you are a great follow, and that's a great place for people to keep track of pro-life things. So one of the reasons that they ought to be motivated to do that is my next question. I know we've only got time for this one more, but President Trump indicated this morning on Twitter that he's going to be announcing his nominee to fill the vacant seat on the U.S. Supreme Court tomorrow at 8 p.m. So what does that portend for the pro-life movement?
Well, you know, let's face it, for a lot of us, it motivated our vote back in November because we were very, you know, not sure what to do. And, of course, after late June, when many of the Supreme Court decisions came down, we saw Hellerstedt v. Whole Women's Health and then the pharmacist decision. I mean, it's really what motivated everything. And for me, it was very important. Justice Scalia passed away on my birthday last year, and I'll never forget that, and thinking about the future of our country. So I think that there's going to be a lot of hope. I think that he's going to be faithful to what he's promised, that we'll have a judge that's going to interpret the Constitution instead of legislating from the bench. So, you know, we'll all be waiting with anticipation to see what tomorrow night at 8 p.m. brings, and then, of course, helping to get that through the Senate.
Absolutely. And folks can see how you respond to that by following your Twitter feed, at Jeannie And then MFL stands for March for Life. So JEANNEMFL. Hey, Jeannie, thank you so much for being with us again on the Reconnect.
Thanks for having me.
We really
appreciate
it.
Thanks for the shout out for my Twitter account, too. Bye, Carmen.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye. All right, friends. So Jeannie echoes what I was just saying prior to my conversation with her, which is that I do think for a lot of us, you know, the Trump vote was motivated by the Supreme Court opportunity that is now before him in terms of naming a nominee, but also issues related to abortion and related to life. And so the demonstration of support given not only by Vice President Mike Pence on behalf of the president, but also Kellyanne Conway's presence at the March for Life and her address to the participants. Those are really significant indications that there's a pro-life spirit. There is a culture of life on the march in America. And so the march continues. It's not just a one-day thing. It's an opportunity for each and every one of us to advocate for life year in and year out. Okay, so back to the issue of the day, which is the executive order signed by Donald Trump in relationship to travel bans from seven Muslim-majority countries, and then also the suspension of refugees from Syria. I've got a little audio from Sunday morning on CNN that I'd like to play for you, and then we can talk about it.
If I can just chime in quickly, because you started down the path of this Christian preference. And as a Christian, I think that this is deeply concerning because this is not what our country was built upon. I mean, this is, and I may get in trouble for saying this, but I believe this to be the antithesis to Christianity. I mean, the fact of the matter is we are a country that is built upon vast religions. We are a country that's built upon the you know, beautiful people of all races, of all shades. And the fact that we are now, give us just some, not all. I mean, it's amazing that people are now just pro some lives. When just this week, everybody was pro-life, but now we're just pro some lives.
We accept more refugees. We accept more people, visas, coming in and traveling in our country than almost any other country. We are.
I don't think
and
that's
we understand
accurate.
That's what we're based on.
I don't think that's accurate.
Okay, so the part that I really wanted to lift up to you is this statement of a person who professes to be a Christian. He's speaking as a Christian, and he says that he believes this is the antithesis to Christianity. Okay, let's just pause the button there, and let's ask ourselves, what is Christianity? And therefore, what would be its antithesis? And then he goes on to say, this is not what our country was built on. He then articulates an embrace of beautiful people of all racial diversities from a variety of places. He does not say that our country was necessarily built on religious diversity. It was built on religious freedom. So how should Christians think about these kind of statements? How would you have engaged with a person who is approaching this from a self-identified Christian perspective and yet would say that any kind of restriction on entry into this country is the antithesis of Christianity? Okay, so I'm going to pause there and I'm going to tell you what I think. First of all, there is a difference between the understanding of Christianity as niceness and the understanding of Christianity as a religion, yes, but as a relationship with a king and a kingdom. Okay, so Christians are actually dual citizens. We are primarily citizens of the kingdom of heaven, and we are serving currently as ambassadors with an invitational calling that others would follow the Christ whom we know to be King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So in answer to the question about this being the antithesis of Christianity, the question back to the person is, what is your definition of Christianity? If you would say that securing the nation's borders one way or another is the antithesis of it, or showing possibly preferential treatment to Christians, which is the particular point that the speaker was addressing at the time, if that's the antithesis of Christianity, then how are you defining Christianity? That is a critical question to ask in the midst of this kind of conversation. People, citizenship matters. Citizenship actually matters. You are a citizen of a particular country, and citizenship matters. And if you are a citizen of the United States of America, there are certain responsibilities that come related to that, and there are certain privileges related to that. And you and I are citizens of the kingdom of heaven, and that means something. There are certain responsibilities related to that, and there are certain privileges related to that. And let me just tell you that the kingdom of God doesn't have the kind of open borders that this person is suggesting Christianity asserts. That is universalism. That's the concept that the kingdom of heaven is just literally just open to anyone who wants to wander in. That's not what Christ said. He said there's a gate. He said there's a way. He said there's a door, and he is it. There is a one way, one small point of entry into citizenship in the kingdom of heaven, and it's Jesus. And that's actually the Christian conversation that should be had by Christians who want to be talking about issues related to the current conversation in our culture. Every nation is not America. And America is not a nation of everybody and anybody. It has borders. It has laws. It has security concerns. It has obligations to its own citizens. Not everyone is a member of every nation. You are actually a citizen of a particular nation. Likewise, not everyone is a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. You and I are ambassadors of a particular kingdom and representatives of a very particular king. There are entry requirements. There's a purview that the sovereign God gets to set, or the sovereign government gets to determine. So this is a great opportunity for a conversation with our neighbors about whether or not they actually know how they're getting in, how they're going to immigrate to heaven when the time comes. This is a great opportunity to have conversations about where our real citizenship lies. Yes, there are lots of other conversations that we need to be having. There's a lot of confusion and misinformation and hyperbole out there related to the executive order. Seven countries. Why these seven countries? Muslim-majority countries, but maybe not necessarily the most Muslim-majority countries. On and on and on and on and on. Is there a preference given to religious minorities? And in the case where Christians are the religious minority, are they getting a preferential treatment? People with green cards, I got to tell you, for Christians, the issue ought to be the question of citizenship. Just drive the conversation to a place where you have a home field advantage. And you have a home field advantage when the kingdom that you're talking about is the kingdom of God. And when entrance into the kingdom that you're talking about is about entrance into the kingdom of heaven. This conversation that we are having globally and this conversation that we are having nationally is very much consumed with the here and now and the life upon this earth. But every single person you and I ever encounter and every single person we ever see on television, that they actually are an eternal being, and they're going to live eternally in one kingdom or another. And I am far more interested in people being able to immigrate into the kingdom of heaven than to any of the kingdoms of the earth. It's a privilege to live in the United States of America. There's no question about that. People want to come here. There's no question about that. We should have really good immigration systems, and we should be doing for refugees absolutely everything that is in our capability to do. And we have talked about that at length on this program before. So you know I have a heart for refugees, and you know I have a heart for comprehensive immigration reform. And those are conversations that need to seriously take place. But right now, Christians need to be taking advantage of the fact that everybody wants to talk about these things right now. And if everybody wants to talk about something, then you and I got to be equipped to talk about it from a distinctively Christian perspective, not just adding our voice to the cacophony of screamers out there who are constantly frankly stirring the pot. All right. In case you missed it, scientists set the doomsday clock forward by 30 seconds. Now, the reason that I bring this up is because I feel like every time some Christian out there makes some statement about the end of the world or prediction about the end of the world, man, they just get hammered by the secular media. So I want to empower you with this information so that you can whip out this from scientists who are declaring the end of the world is now 30 seconds closer because of the Trump administration. You can find it at Doomsday Clock 2017. Hey, after the break, we're going to be talking about some really cool stuff related to religious broadcasters. So don't go away. This is The Reconnect. Come right back.
Welcome back to The Reconnect with your host, Carmen LaBurge. Now, back to Carmen.
Hello, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. And so we are here to equip you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. And we've got resources posted for you on our website. It's reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can always like us on Facebook. You can let me know what you're thinking about on Twitter. That's the best place to directly engage with me. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. We are privileged to have with us this afternoon Dr. Jerry Johnson. He's the president and CEO of the National Religious Broadcasters. So he is in part responsible for our being on the air every day and keeping the airwaves open to Christian communicators of all varieties. NRB is an international association of Christian communicators whose member organizations like ours, like the station that you're listening to right now, reach millions of people worldwide with the gospel. It is the mission of NRB to advance biblical truth, promote media excellence, and defend free speech. So that's Dr. Johnson's job every day, but he's trained in Christian ethics. He has served in seminary faculties and in higher Christian education. You can follow him on Twitter at Dr. Jerry Johnson. I think of him as a First Amendment advocate, among all of those other things. Dr. Johnson, welcome to the Reconnect.
Carmen, it's great to be with you and to be on Reconnect.
Hey, it's great to have you. You are in D.C. We want to know, have you ever experienced anything like the Trump transition?
No, I think, he made a lot of promises when he was campaigning, and he's trying to fulfill some of them. And people, I think they were just as shocked about his first week as they were about the election victory. But it's obviously, it's a culture shift. There's no doubt about it. It's a paradigm shift. The media, the elites, the lobbyists, even the Republican establishment. I mean, it's shock and awe.
It is. And we noted at the outset of the program today, I mean, just went through the litany of what he did in the first week, and it's kind of a breathless race. It'll be interesting to see if he keeps up that pace. I'm interested to know from your perspective, you know, from Christian communication, from media perspective, how are you working with this new administration, maybe in ways that are different than you were able to work with the Obama administration?
Well, you know, first of all, we work regularly with the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, and so that was a great concern to us. And we got the man that we wanted to get into that chairmanship, Ajit Pai. So we feel very good about that. He's a First Amendment advocate. He's an advocate for small radio, AM radio. He was against so-called net neutrality, which really was going to bring taxation and regulation of the internet. Of course, that's still, those rules are still standing, but I think he'll do what he can to reverse some of that. So for us, that was key. And then, if you know, Trump's been vocal about things like the Johnson Amendment, you know, that Christians have been persecuted or discriminated against, and you know, I'm glad he vocalizes that. Some people don't like that, but we feel that's good.
Okay. So let's talk specifically, if we can, about the upcoming National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Orlando, February 27 to March 2nd. We are live on WTLN in the Orlando radio market. So our Orlando listeners in particular should listen up right now, because I think that there are lots of things that are designed for the public, including just the overall theme this year.
That's right. I mean, this is open to the public. You do have to register, so you would go to nrbconvention.org if you want to register for this. But you know, this is the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther nailing that 95 theses to the door at the church at Wittenberg. And you know, it's not just history, it's the present, because if you're an evangelical or a Protestant, I mean, this is the distinctive, really, of the Christians you worship with, the things you hear preached. And so we're organizing the five solas. These were the distinctives of the Reformation. So one of them, for instance, is sola gratia, grace alone. We're saved by grace alone. Tony Evans is going to preach on that. R.C. Sproul is doing sola scriptura, the Bible alone. Erwin Lutzer is doing faith alone. Mac Brunson of Jacksonville, Florida, is doing Christ alone. And Dr. Barry Creamer is doing to the glory of God alone. So, you know, within all that's happening in NRB, there's so much technical and media, film, but we're going to have these five thematic sermon treatments, and I'm very excited about that. Open to the public.
Oh,
if
I love
register.
That. If people go to nrbconvention.org, one of the things I would really encourage folks to look at, obviously the lineup of speakers is just incredible. But there are a couple of tracks. There's a pastor's track on
That's
Friday.
Right.
There's a track for lay people who serve in all kinds of fields. And on Wednesday evening, there's a worship service that is literally open to the public. All they have
yeah.
to do is fill out the free Eventbrite registration.
Exactly.
So I really do think, you know, you guys are encouraging participation by folks other than just broadcasting professionals.
Yeah, the Wednesday night service will have Tony Evans and Nick Hall. And again, you go to Eventbrite for that. But you can go to the NRB website to see how to navigate that. There's no charge for that. You just have to register. But we've got Eric Metaxas coming. Sean Hannity will be there. Hugh Hewitt, the Benham brothers. So you know, this is Todd Starnes from Fox, Lauren Green from Fox News will be there. It's the pastor of the fastest growing church in the world from India. This church is running 150,000 people. It's only 10 years old. That's going to be fascinating just to hear this story, Dr. Satish Kumar. So, and you know, Carmen, here's the thing. NRB used to be big radio and big television, and of course now we've gone into film. We always do a lot of film. But every Christian now is using media. You know, if they're using Facebook or Twitter, if they're doing podcasts or preachers preaching sermons, that's why we've started a pastor's track. But really every Christian who's using Facebook or Twitter or doing YouTube ought to come, because we're going to talk about how to use these tools more effectively for the gospel. We have a whole day. It's a digital media summit where people can learn how to use these platforms that are free. You don't have to have a license, but to use them for the gospel.
Yes, but unlicensed drivers, you and I both know, is kind of dangerous. So one of the great things about coming to NRB is even though you don't have to have a license to be on social media, you can be equipped to utilize your social media platform in a way that honors Jesus. And I think that that is, that seems to be, in my experience, the heartbeat of NRB. It's absolutely the best of what is out there and available, but it helps the person who is communicate in a way that honors Jesus. And so I really couldn't advocate more strongly for folks to come, but I will add this for my listeners. I'm going to be there broadcasting live from Radio Row at the NRB.
That's great.
During the week. And so my listeners can come by. You can, you know, I don't know. I don't even know that I'll have something for you that I could autograph, but you know, we can send out our picture together. How's that sound?
Well,
you would do that, wouldn't
good.
You, Jerry?
You'd
come by.
Fact,
you would come by and get
when I did radio.
There you go.
And it really works, and it's a chance to, you know, meet people that are out there that you've never met, and for them to meet you and to actually see how an interview works. And so you're going to be interviewing some of these people, I'm sure, like Lee Strobel or Eric Metaxas. You know, they'll be around. So you're going to have some great interviews that week, and these people will get to see some of those folks.
Absolutely. And Tony Evans is one of the folks that we're going to have on with us that week, and we are really excited. So is there anything that you want to talk about today that we haven't talked about? Because the First Amendment issues would be what would come to the top of my list. But I also know that I intersect with you at stuff related to Israel. So I don't know. You might have a bee in your bonnet today that you want to buzz.
Well, you know, I just want to say you mentioned the mission statement early on and, you know, advancing biblical truth. We've all seen Christian radio and television that is on the edge or actually into error or heresy. So NRB, you know, one of the things about going back to these five solas is we want to drive down the doctrinal stake, the theological stake. That's so important at NRB. And we're going to have two sessions on Islam, for instance, and biblical teaching on homosexuality and same-sex marriage. So, you know, we're on to the doctrinal. But we're also then promoting media excellence. And what you mentioned about sort of best practices, you're going to get that in radio. You're going to get it in church media. We have a church media summit. So if there are people that, you know, work with their media team at church, this is the place to find out how to live stream your service, how to podcast with your pastor, get him you know, into podcasting. And then on the defending free speech, so for instance, we've got Kelvin Cochran coming, who was the former Atlanta fire chief. Folks will remember, this is a fire chief who was fired for writing a study book for his church on, you know, robust manhood, and he had just a little paragraph in there about sexuality, and homosexuality was not God's plan, you know, for biblical manhood. And on the basis of that paragraph for his church study book, he was fired. And so, you know, this is not theoretical when we say defending free speech. This is real. We'll have the Benham brothers there who lost their television show over this issue. So we're going to have real victims, really, you know, in the culture war that can tell us, you know, what happened and why, and what we need to do to stand against this, to guard against this. So there might be school teachers out there, government workers out there, and they're concerned, you know, and want to know where are the minefields and how can they be bold and stay faithful. So this conference is for them, too.
Absolutely. So, friends, you need to join Dr. Jerry Johnson and myself at the NRB convention, and the way that you get signed up for that is nrbconvention.org. Dr. Johnson, I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks so much, Carmen. We'll see you there.
All right. All right, friends, it's time to go below the fold. This is the point in the show where we like to lift up stories and make connections that are designed to help you start and engage with others in conversations that may not initially appear to be about Jesus or about God, but where the introduction of eternal principles can change not only the conversation, but possibly the course of another person's thinking. And then ultimately, if their mind is changed, maybe their life would be changed. And so isn't that what we're all hoping for? So one of the things that has gone on in just the last few days is people's response to the executive order issued by the president related to immigrants, refugees, and even visitors from certain countries, particularly in the Middle East. It's a list of 7 countries. My guess is that list is going to change over time, and I would expect it to grow, not be further limited. So the conversation then moves immediately for those who think that our borders should be open and porous and that everyone should be here. So the attorneys rushed to the airports, and the attorneys who rushed to the airports were representing an organization called the ACLU. Now, the ACLU does not only have as its mission statement the defense and advocacy of people seeking to immigrate into the United States. The ACLU is on the forefront of all kinds of what they consider civil liberty violations here in the United States. So the ACLU stands for the American Civil Liberties Union. Now, ordinarily, in an ordinary year, they take in $4 million in online annual giving. $4 million in online annual giving. Since Friday, they've taken in more than $24 million in online giving. So the reaction of people to the inability of, at least over the weekend, 109 people to be unable to move swiftly through customs and immigration at U.S. airports. That's how many people's travel was interrupted, 109. $24 million in giving to the ACLU in response to that. Now, it's important to put your money where your mouth is. It's certainly important to put your money where your concern is. But the response to the ACLU involving itself in these particular issues, I think, is evidence of just how much money there is on the sidelines right now in terms of advocacy. And if you will recall, right after the election of Donald Trump, Planned Parenthood received a surge in giving that was unprecedented in their history. Tens of millions of dollars given to Planned Parenthood just after the election of Donald Trump. Now, I will also say that there are people who are sending money, who are using their money to respond to things that they view as probably, although we don't know this yet, because the story is not yet all told about why this mosque burned down. But there is a mosque in Texas that burned down, and someone got on to GoFundMe and started a GoFundMe page that has already raised in excess of the goal. The goal was $850,000, and it's already topped $892,000 in giving since the GoFundMe page was started, to support the rebuilding of this Texas mosque. Now, I am not saying that people are not free to use their money however they will. What I am saying is that the culture war is on. All right? So the funds that are flowing to fuel the culture war for years to come are being given right now on pretty much one side of the conversation. And you and I just need to recognize that. We need to recognize that in the past, they would have said, to the victors go the spoils. And that's not just exactly how it seems to work anymore. So right now, if you have a heart for the unborn, the preborn, if you have a heart for life issues, you need to be putting your money where your mouth is. If you are concerned about border protection, I don't know, there's probably some nonprofit out there that's engaged in the thing that you are most concerned about. So there needs to be a spirit of generosity in terms of those who want to advocate for refugees from a Christian worldview versus those who just want to superfund organizations like the ACLU. The $24 million that was given over the weekend to the ACLU is not going to all be used to help those 109 people. That is not going to happen. I can assure you that the ACLU is going to redistribute that those funds to things that they're concerned about. And things that they're concerned about are things like advocating for abortion, advocating for LGBTQ concerns, advocating for SOGI laws. I mean, I don't know if you saw this yet, but California has now banned all travel to the state of Kansas that would be paid for by state funds. Okay, so just, yes, I know, there's a travel ban. You heard that there was a travel ban, and you thought that the travel ban was people coming from seven countries which have serious problems with Islamic Jihad terrorists. And instead, there is also a travel ban from California to Kansas, because Kansas is not supporting the kinds of freedoms for liberties, special accommodations for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people as the state of California would like to see happen. So while we're paying attention to some things, other things are going on. And I know that you and I can't focus on everything simultaneously, and so we do need to be sending our funds to those organizations that are doing the things that we want to see prosper. And if there's somebody on the forefront of the culture war standing there speaking your piece for you into the issues of the day, I would encourage you to come alongside that person in that ministry and equip them. Equip them with the funds that they need to do what they're doing. So just ask yourself, I mean, if you're like me, you're getting around to doing your taxes, right? It's that time of year. I am not a super organized person when it comes to all of the sheets of paper related to taxes. And so it's always, you know, at least a day-long task for me to just sift and sort through all the papers and the receipts and get them organized into the right stacks and, you know, all of that paperwork. And so one of the things that I always discover at this time of year is the things that I gave to that I kind of forgot I gave to. I got passionate about it at one particular point, and I gave a gift to a particular ministry or individual who was busy doing something that I didn't have time to do, but I sure was glad it was happening. And so it's always an opportunity to sort of celebrate not only the things that I give to consistently over time and I have a commitment to and my tithes to my church and those kinds of things, but those sort of like spontaneous one-off gifts. And I hope that you have some kind of record of your spontaneous one-off gifts. And maybe this is a good time for each of us to become more intentional even about fueling with our funding those people and ministries and advocacy groups who are engaged on the side of culture war issues that we're concerned about. So if you if you have these kinds of concerns, there's probably a ministry that's out there doing precisely what you're passionate about doing. And so I would just encourage you to support them and support them generously. If we happen to be among them, great. We would love to have your support. This is a ministry-supported, listener-supported radio show, and you can support us by going to reconnectwithcarmen.com and just clicking on the Donate Now button. We try to make it as simple as possible for you. We want your feedback, and financial feedback is great encouragement. Maybe you don't have time to send me a tweet. Maybe you're not even on Twitter, but you are probably have access to the internet. And if you're supportive of what you're hearing here, and we are helping you engage the culture in the conversations of the day in a way that honors Jesus, and you want to support us in that, we would sure appreciate it. Hey, the other thing that we got going, if you go to the website, reconnectwithcarmen.com, the other thing that we've got going is the Kindness Challenge. Well, if you've been on social media in the last 48 hours, or in the last week, or frankly in the last 6 months, you are aware that we have a bit of a kindness deficiency in the United States. There's a there's a there's a bit of a kindness crisis going on. And it's not that there's too much, it's that there's too little. It seems as if we've lost sight of kindness as a social value. And you and I both know that kindness is fruit. It's not a fruit. So the fruit of the Spirit is that we have the Spirit. Like, that's actually, you know, that's actually the deal. This gift. And that's that gift, the gift of the Holy Spirit, produces within us this variety of fruit. So it's like a fruit. So I'm going to talk here about, just a minute, about the fruit basket that is in us, that we are supposed to be cultivating with ever greater abundance. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. Not just a little bit, not just once, but in ever more abundant measure. So let's do a little fruit inspection on your fruit bowl. You know, if you were to look at your love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control fruit bowl this year, is there more there than there was last year? Or is there, you know, you got a vitamin deficiency in one particular fruit category? All right. So if kindness is the citrus fruit category, you know, maybe it's time to work on that a little bit. That's really all the kindness challenge is about. It's really about focusing on one fruit, the fruit of kindness, and seeing if by intentionally focusing on it for 1 month, we could produce a bigger harvest of it in our lives. And the harvest of it in our lives is not for our own benefit. It's actually for the benefit of others. Kindness is that which benefits others. And so what the Kindness Challenge is gonna invite us to do, you just sign up at the website, reconnectwithcarmen.com. We'll send you a daily email encouraging you in the Kindness Challenge. There'll be ways and opportunities for you to report back on how the Kindness Challenge is going. I'll let you know from time to time how my targeted person is faring in the Kindness Challenge, because that's at least the way I'm going to approach it. I'm picking out one person, and I am making them the focus of my Kindness Challenge. And so you might do that as well. So for me, you all can know this, the part of the fruit salad that is, or fruit bowl that is generally tends to be a little depleted is the patience one. I'm not a very patient person. I know that probably really shocks and stuns you. And there are some challenges that I face related to self-control. Now, they're not big issues that you should be overly concerned about. But if you wanted to be praying specifically for me, those are two areas where my fruit's not as abundant as it needs to be and as it should be. So there you go. I invite you into the Kindness Challenge. I invite you to join me in it. Again, go to reconnectwithcarmen.com. Avail yourself of all the resources we have posted there. Communicate with me on Facebook and Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. All right, people, that's all we got time for today. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Have a great day, and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.